I'm sure you don't usually hear the end of that, because most times I've heard that song, they cut out that little, garbled, that never could be any other way thing. We were just talking before about the Beatles song All My Lovin', where they throw in that 6-8 counter rhythm against the 4-4. And you were telling me about She Loves You, how the Beatles always trying something different.
Yeah.
What they do in She Loves You?
Well, they basically ended it with a sixth chord. I don't know what key the song's in, but if it's in G, that would be a G6, which is not, you know, crazy. But the way they voiced it, the notes are very close together. I think they sing like an E, or no, I'm sorry, a B, D, and E. I mean, they're just as close together as they can get, and it just creates this sound that. You know, we were also talking before about how songwriters and arrangers and musicians will just do add a little spice to the dish that makes it, you know. And so people say, "Oh, I don't know, I just like the beat, or I like the melody," but it's actually something that you don't even really identify that really is what's got you deciding that you like that song more than another song. And Beatles were the masters of throwing in something that you just didn't even know they did it. They just like snuck it to you.
Right.
You know?
Dennis Dykin says, he calls it ear candy.
Yeah.
Just throw, you know, a little something extra in there and grabs the attention of the listener.
Yep.
That there was A Day in the Life, and I'm sure most people know that that's an orchestra that they had in the studio, and they had clown noses on all the orchestra players, and they had a play their instrument from one end of the instrument to the other for that. And then that chord at the end, actually, I think it's four pianos. I think four of the Beatles or George Martin or something, they're all playing that piano, and they slam on that chord. And then Jeff Emerick turns up all the gain on everything so that they capture every last the wavelength of the piano. Mm-hmm. Have you read his book, Jeff Emerick's book?
No, I've read snippets from it, yeah, but
a lot of interesting things, although other people have told me there's other better, that, you know, there's different discrepancies as to, you know, everybody's different points of view as to what went on, but still fascinating the way they made their music. And so we played She's Leaving Home and Come Get Me a Diner Hand, All My Lovin', and we started that off with Jeffrey Gaines. And now at 8:32, Gary is going to give us another live song. And what's this one called, Gary?
This is called Crying Fire. I was going to say Frying Crier. Crying Fire. And it's another one from my tribute album of several years ago. But I wrote it, specifically wrote it as a tribute to Jeffrey Gaines. Not because, I don't even know how I would start to say, let's write a song that like Paul McCartney might write or John or whoever. I don't even know how to do that. But it's put it this way, it just inspired me thinking about the way he would approach a song, kind of inspired me to write it.
That's an interesting device I haven't really encountered much, where you pretend that you're that person writing a song or for them to sing it. It's a song that you imagine they would sing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what you're called. So interesting. All kinds of tricks songwriters use to get the muse working. All right, so the name of the song is?
Crying Fire.
Crying Fire.
Your trembling lips can hold you in, an open book you are to me. If black is white, I understand. I see below the surface. Scream desire, tell me all. one heart, one soul. What happened to the promises we made? I know you want some part of me. If I could tap into you, its way into your heart, making it hard to see your crying fire. Your crying fire. Your crying fire. Oh, 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 your crying fire.
Very good.
Thank you.
Great guitar work, and your voice is not that bad.
Okay.
You're hitting some high notes up there.
I had my friend Larry Hayden sing that song on the CD. Just uh-huh. You know, just because I could sing it, but he did a better job. So,
see what? And you said there was 30 songs on that CD?
Something like that, 30 or 31, I think. Yeah.
Is that a CD that's still available?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
they're
cool.
They're all available on CD Baby, Amazon.com, Rhapsody, iTunes, so on and so forth. Yeah.
Okay, so people know to go. Gary Ault is a very easy name to remember. ALT, believe it or not, that's not a stage name. That's his real name, Gary Ault. And time here is 8:36, and we're going to get to the top two albums from Gary's Desert Island Discs after this.
WMSC listeners, join me, Tom Kaminsky, and Mike Mitch, Mary Capella, and Gene Sower for
The Back to the Future Show.
Listen to us every Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. here at 90.3 WMSC.
We may be alumni from decades past,
but we're back playing the best old and new music.
And the Beatles, too. Something old, new, barred, and blues.
Getting power pop. And Celtic, reel to reel.
Playing the blues, but not singing them.
Tune in Fridays from 10 to 1 on 90.3 WMSC.
Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. Bad luck and trouble's my only friend. I've been down ever since I was 10. Born under a bad sign. Since I began to crawl, if it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. No wine and women, it's all I crave. The big bad woman are gonna carry me to my grave. Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. ¶¶
can troubles been my only friend. I've been down ever since I was 10. Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no love. If it wasn't for real bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. Born under a bad sign. Born under a bad
station. Black roof country, no gold pavement, tired starlings. Silver horses run down moonbeams in your dark eyes. Dawn light smiles on you leaving my contentment. Tired starving.
Paul, gonna move you by the Arkansas. We'll be right back.
also. And the sun got the blue about me.
There you heard the very first time Eric Clapton's voice was ever recorded in a recording studio when he was in John Mayall's Blues Breakers. And actually, John Mayall was not, you know, endorsing it, but he consented to let Eric sing the song. I think he does a pretty good job. And
yeah.
As we know, he's gone on to sing a few more since then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your favorite Desert Island disc of all time, John Mayall's Blues Breakers.
Yeah, because I discovered Cream when I was, I guess, maybe 10 or 11 or something like that. And it was because I was a drummer in school. My sister thought I should listen to Ginger Baker. And I said, oh, yeah, he's great. But guess what? This is Eric Clapton guy. And by the way, Jack Bruce is pretty good, too. So I got really, really into Cream. And from there, I thought, well, I got to grab all the Eric Clapton records I can get my hands on. There were only a half a dozen out at the time, including the Blues Breakers. So I bought that. That goes back to 64 or something, maybe 65. And I discovered the blues. It knocked me out. It just completely knocked me out. And I will say to this day that, yeah, you can try to play like Andre Segovia. You can play like Joe Pass, John McGlade. There's all kinds of guitars and all kinds of genres to imitate. But as far as I'm concerned, I didn't need to learn anything over and above what I learned from just that one album. Just
the John Mayall Blues Breakers.
Yeah, I mean, he was like, I don't know, 18 or 19 or whatever years old. He's just this kid from England playing this, and that's why they called him God. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but the whole Clapton is God thing, because he just played, he just penetrated your soul. I mean, just I don't know. I'm just lost for words, but it just totally blows me away to this day every time I listen to that record.
Yeah, I guess you've read his book, Clapton's autobiography.
Yeah, yeah.
Scary parts of it, that how amazing he's still alive.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think he's amazed as well. Yeah.
But he is, and he's still making great music. But that was the start back with Cream and the Blues Breakers. So we played White Room, Born Under a Bad Sign, and What I'd Say. And I like What I'd Say a lot, because that riff turned into I Feel Fine by the Beatles. It was used in One Way Out
mm-hmm.
by the Allman Brothers. That riff's been used a lot, but it all started with Mr. Ray Charles, and there's the take on it by John Mayall and his Blues Breakers. 8:55 here on WMSC on a cold night. Mike, Mitch is me. I'm here usually on Friday mornings, and this time I'm filling in for Joe Pasonic, and Gary Alt is my live guest in the studio, and Gary gave me another one of his CDs. Now, why is this one called Not For Sale to Miners, Gary? Am I allowed to play this on the air?
Yeah, I think so. No, you know, it was just a sort of tongue-in-cheek thing. It just popped into my head one day. I've got a certain attitude about censorship, which I just think it's immature and stupid the way it's actually implemented in this country. And obviously, you don't want just any old thing to be broadcast to you know, the youth of America, but so often it's just absurd. I mean, you know, like they'll pixelate, you know, a middle finger or a naked woman. It's like, well, we know what your pixel is, you know. And the same thing with words, they'll bleep them out. It's like, well, we already know what the word was, so it's in our head. So what's the difference? So I was just thinking that, you know, they're trying to sanitize the youth of America, but they're actually almost corrupting them by all this silly stuff. And then so now you have these records that are what do they call them? Explicit lyrics, you know. What I don't know what they, you know.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that by identifying them, that makes them even sell more.
Yeah, yeah. So this album is like, no, actually, in reality, it's for anybody. I mean, okay. I didn't put, like, you know, songs that are necessarily going to appeal to a 14-year-old per se, but it's, you know what? It's for anybody. Okay, there's nothing on here that's going to offend somebody, but I'm not working at making the least offensive record in the world either. I just thought it was a tongue-in-cheek thing.
Yeah.
And then the cover is basically, I mean, if I could describe it real quickly, it says for sale to minors, but then there's obviously a spray paint job of the word not, so it's not for sale to minors. And then beneath the billboard is a little kid arresting a policeman who is obviously the person that just spray painted and vandalized the sign. So it's just, I don't know. It's a tongue-in-cheek way of saying the world's kind of backwards, you know.
So who'd you have help you with the art?
I did it all myself.
Ah,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
That's a clever idea.
Yeah.
So this song here is God in a Box?
Yep.
So what's that about?
It was actually from an actual conversation I had with a Lutheran minister or something like that? And he was it was sort of a religious conversation, I guess. But he was just basically – he just said you can't put God in a box. And what he was trying to say is that, like, you know, God is a mystery and should be a mystery. And I thought, well, it's not a mystery to me. I don't know, like, what – so he says, well, you can't put God in a box. In other words, you can't, you know, come up with your version of God that fits your – you know, makes you happy, mm-hmm. and package that and say, okay, we're done. Let's put a bow on it. I just thought it's a shame that's the guy that's going to teach a whole church full of people, and that's his attitude. I just thought it was such a ridiculous thing to say, so I wrote a song about it. And you know, it's not about him necessarily, but it's just, you know, those kind of things. But the reason why I wanted to cue this up, because we were just playing the old Bluesbreaker stuff,
yeah.
And the guitar on this, the lead guitar, is very – I was trying to get that sound of those old – Clapton records with not even just from the Blues Breakers album, but they put out some 45s like Bernard Jenkins, and there's another one, I forget the name of it, but they just had this raw sound. They were recorded in mono, just a piano and guitar, or just a harmonica and a guitar, really, really raw sound, but just a beautiful blues sound. And I was just trying to go for that, you know, that old Les Paul, you know, whatever you want to call it, just that simple, raw sound. So,
all right. So it's now 9 o'clock here at WMSC FM, Upper Montclair, 91.9. And here's Gary Ault from God in a Box.
Snowdrop ain't supposed to be. Open the book, take a good look at what a name can mean. Love you too, see right through the smoke screen. We got God, we
That was a CD I got from Gary. His song, God in a Box. So what I'm going to play now is Gary picked his 10 favorite guitar solos. It's up to you to figure out what they are.
Thank you. married child, save you from another man. Lying about it, everything's a crying about it. About it.
Jack Bruce, Ginger Baker, Eric Clapton.
Save the best name for last, Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton was featured heavily in Gary's guitar solos. If you didn't know all those solos, I'll read them back to you here. The first one was Larry Carlton, Third World Man. That's a Steely Dan song. Then While My Guitar Gently Weeps by Eric Clapton from the Beatles. Long Tall Sally, George Harrison from the Beatles' second album. Something, George Harrison from Abbey Road. Midnight at the Oasis. That's Amos Garrett from the Maria Muldaur hit single. 5 Long Years was Eric Clapton from The Cradle. Machine Gun was Jimi Hendrix. You have to include him in there somewhere. And that's from his Band of Gypsies collection. Have You Heard was Eric Clapton from Bluesbreaker. Crossroads, Eric Clapton from Wheels of Fire. And that last one was Spoonful. The song doesn't get as much airplay as some of the other stuff by Cream, but some amazing solos on there. And that's from Fresh Cream UK release?
Yeah, they didn't, and it was typical in those days. They did it with the Beatles all the time for them. By the time it came to this country, released on whatever label, that happened to be ATCO, they'd just take something off and save it for later or something just to milk it, you know. So Spoonful, I think it was actually a single, but it showed up. I heard it on the Best of, I think it was called Best of Cream. It's the first Cream album I actually got. I had no idea who they were. Although I had heard, you know, Sunshine of Your Love on the, you know, the single version on the radio, like any kid did. But I just never associated with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got Best of Cream, I think, you know, I forget, is that the name of it? I think it's Best of Cream. My sister gave it to me as a graduation gift from sixth grade. And because I was playing drums in the band, and she thought I really need to listen to Ginger Baker and kind of graduate from this Ringo stuff, you know. And then I discovered Clapton. And I think Spoonful was the song on that album that really, really – I mean, I loved the whole record, but that completely blew my mind.
So you switched over to the guitar from the drums after that.
Yeah, I mean, I stayed with the drums, but yeah, I mainly became a guitar player. Uh-huh.
Little did your sister know that she was turning you into a guitarist.
Yeah. I mean, She, you know, it's funny. She used to listen to basically top 40, like AM radio. Well, we all did because that's all we had back in the day. And, you know, never got into all the – I mean, I got into jazz and – you know, she never really got into that. But she was such a big influence on me because she was, you know, 6 years older than me. And she was the one with the record player. We used to play, you know, vinyl records on these little ceramic needle portable dealy bobs, you know.
Yep.
Terrible quality. But, yeah, that's what we did.
And before that, your mother was a big influence on your music.
Yeah. Well, she tells the story of how when she was pregnant with me, she went to see, was it The Barber of Seville or Marriage of Figaro? I forget. Or maybe it was Così fan tutti. She went to see a Mozart opera.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Marriage of Figaro. But I don't remember because I was I was in the womb. But she's convinced because she was, you know, she gets so emotional over this kind of musical experiences that – that was, I mean, of all the kids, everybody has musical ability and stuff, but I was the one that took to it the most.
And you were the one that attended with her these shows.
Yeah. So, and I mean, the first concert I remember seeing was Ravel's Bolero being played by the Radio City Orchestra. We just went to see a movie, had no idea what the musical entertainment spot was going to be, but this orchestra comes up out of the pit, kind of, you know, they kind of raise it up, and all of a sudden there's this orchestra, and I had no idea, and they play Bolero. I didn't know what Ravel's Bolero was, but I just was enamored of the whole, it was amazing to me. It was like magic.
Amazing classical piece to get exposed to at that age.
Yep.
But I'm a big believer in that, in the womb. I used to sing to my daughter in the womb and play the Mozart for her, you know. And of course, when she was when she was born, played a lot of classical stuff for her. It's very important at a young age to expose the brain to great music. And I'd like to thank Gary for coming out here to expose us to his music.
Again,
it's www.garyalt.com.
Yep. I appreciate the opportunity. It's been great.
And you can hear Gary on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
on WNTI. And he's not playing anywhere live soon, but...
I think I have a gig coming up. I just don't know what the date is. December 8th, maybe.
Oh, okay.
What's the name of the place? Two. You know, I have to look it up. But it's with a group I've been playing with called HAL, and we're pretty new.
H-A-L. H-A-L, HAL.
Yeah, and that's basically because it's Hayden Alt. What's this guy's last name? Licklider. I'm sorry. It's Hayden Alt Licklider, and we thought, hey, it's HAL. Let's make it HAL after the 2001 computer. So we're playing. Yeah, I'll look it up. I'll have it for you in a minute.
But people can go on your website maybe and find. Do you put gig information up there?
Yeah, I haven't put this one up yet, but I should.
And do you have a Facebook music page, or your website is really the place to go?
I do have a Facebook music page. I have to tell you that I have not really been supporting it because
Your website looks very good. What server do you use? Where do you have that?
It's HostBaby.
HostBaby.
If you're a CD Baby artist, which
right.
I am, you know, so that all my CDs are available through CDBaby.com. They also have this service called HostBaby.
Right.
They've got something called, BookBaby or something, too, for authors, you know. But HostBaby is for – it's a website that's really easy to design because they do it all in, like templates.
Right.
And it's specifically for musicians who have unique needs. They want to have a special page for song samples, another page for how do you buy my stuff, another page for concert announcements, and another for news, you know, like if you're in a newspaper article, something like that. So, yeah. So it's
It looked like it turned out very well.
Yeah.
When I was doing my webpage, I was between Banzoogle and HostBaby 50-50, and I finally just went to Banzoogle. But I think those are the two best ones out there right now. So Gary will be leaving us soon. I'm going to play my own set of guitar solos, and then I'm going to play some music by my friends like... I'm going to play Do or Say by Sounds Like Digging and a bunch of other stuff before I get out of here at 10 p.m. So, Gary, do you think – is that information on your website where you're playing December 8th?
No, you know what? It will be, though.
People can go to your website and they'll find it there.
Yeah. I'm terribly sorry.
Yeah. Thanks again for coming. It was great to have you.
Well, thank you again. You know what? I just came up with it. It's called Two Alices. It's a little coffee shop. It's Friday, November 15th, and it's in Cornwall, New York.
November 15th?
November 15th,
okay,
Friday.
Okay, so it's coming up in a couple weeks. Okay.
Right. Two Alices.
All right, so people check that out. And here are some more guitar solos, and these are some of my – I wouldn't say they're my favorites. They're the first ones that came to my mind because I wanted to make another setup of guitar solos, and these are the ones that came out of my computer.